Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Nicolini.
Welcome to episode 59 of Global from Asia podcast. Thanksgiving is coming up quickly, and honestly, I forgot about it until I got a couple of invites for turkey dinner at different friends' houses. I'm trying to decide which one to take up on their offer. The holidays, you know, always gets me a little bit homesick, to be honest, and I think I always have mentioned before, it's kind of one of the hardest parts about doing business overseas, you know, and getting homesick and things. But my dad isn't that technically savvy, and the Skype calls haven't been too good, so I took the initiative while I was in Hong Kong last week to buy a tablet phone for 1,500 Hong Kong dollars, which is a little bit less than a couple hundred dollars. I got a prepaid SIM card from China Mobile Hong Kong for 40 Hong Kong dollars, which is about $5. Configured it, got him a Gmail account, a new Gmail account, got Weixin or WeChat installed for him, made a new account there, verified it with the Hong Kong SIM card, rushed off to the Hong Kong Post to find out that I can't mail a battery or electronic device there, so went to DHL, mailed it overnight for 450 Hong Kong dollars, or about 50 or 60 bucks. But he did get it in almost 24 hours, about maybe a little bit more. And we had a video call with him. So my wife, Wendy's all excited, and I got to see Miles, my son, which was, for the first time, pretty amazing. Besides, of course, pictures. Anyways, working on getting a trip to the U.S. together, get a little bit of a family reunion. They haven't made it out to China yet. Okay, anyway, enough of the family stuff and back to business. So quite a few listeners have expressed interest in raising money for their business in Hong Kong and in Asia for the early stages, such as a seed round or Series A. So I want to bring someone on that always a good person to talk to is Titus Mikowski. And he's an active angel investor with his firm Fresco Capital, who's an active angel investor in the community. And he also is actively speaking and sharing his knowledge and experiences on LinkedIn as well as in events in Hong Kong. He's been here for over 11 years. So he shares some pretty good insights as well as investments he's made and the thought process and the industries that are popular for the area and his own interests. So it's pretty good to get insights. Also on the show notes, I'm going to give away a free cheat sheet for different Hong Kong investors, firms, and programs in the area of Hong Kong as well as mainland China. So check it out on globalfromasia.com/episode59. Okay, enough of my intro, and let's get into the interview. Enjoy. Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have a special guest with us today, Titus Mikowski from Fresco Capital. Thank you for being here, Titus.
Thanks, Mike, for having me.
Sure. We've gotten to know each other over the past couple of years. You're very active and helpful in the startup community as an angel investor and mentor. So thank you for your contributions, first of all. And can you maybe introduce yourself quickly to our listeners?
Sure. So just, I guess, a brief overview of what we do at Fresco. We're a seed stage fund, and we're based in Hong Kong, but we invest quite a bit in the U.S. also. And our philosophy is focused on people, diversity, and impact. And so diversity specifically, for example, you know that in terms of gender diversity, the statistics are pretty interesting. Only 11% of venture-backed companies have at least one female founder. When we look at our portfolio, it's 45%. You know, geographical diversity, we've got quite a bit in Asia, but also quite a bit in the U.S. And so overall, we believe that having this broader perspective, you know, it's not just about being nice people. It actually helps us to generate higher returns for our investors and also help our portfolio companies. And then that goes to the second point, their impact, which is, you know, from our perspective, we're not passive investors, but we're also not micromanaging the teams. Our role is to support founders with impact at key inflection points. And when we don't have the answer, then we go to our network, which ties back to the diversity. We have a very diverse network. And then so finally, circling back to people, when we're providing support and not micromanagement, it means that we really need the founders to understand their market. So founder market fit is very important for us. And then also, we really have to have a strong alignment of values. So we do spend a lot of time on the softer issues. So as you can see, even though we're investing in a lot of tech startups, we actually put a big emphasis on the people side of things.
True. I've learned in my time too is the people, especially at very early stage, is more critical than the product or the market. I would agree for sure. So you're originally from Canada, if I'm correct, and now you're in Hong Kong, and maybe just give some people some background about that. Or
yeah, so my story, going back in time, I was actually born in Poland and then grew up in Canada and then took a roundabout journey to Hong Kong. I spent some time in London, in Tokyo, and in Singapore. And then about 14 years ago, came to Hong Kong, and at that point just fell in love with the city. And so I was on this plan of I'll stay 3 to 5 more years, and every year just got extended, and now 14 years later, here I am.
Yeah, I know that story. It's definitely a dynamic and amazing city. So it's great you're in here. So that kind of leads into my next question. I think this is probably a popular question you get, but the investor environment in Hong Kong, what's your take on it?
Sure. I think it depends on what the measure is. So if we're talking about purely from a quantitative perspective, you know, there is no shortage of money in Hong Kong. And in fact, Hong Kong is one of the financial capitals of the world. So there's lots of money available from investors. I think the bigger challenge for the startup ecosystem is a lot of that money and capital has been made in real estate in particular, or if not, some other more liquid type of investments. And so a lot of times, investors don't really have as much of an appreciation of what's going on at early stage startups. And yes, Hong Kong definitely has a very strong entrepreneurial history, but you know, a lot of those entrepreneurs made their fortunes many decades ago. So the environment has changed significantly since then. So that's probably the gap in the market in terms of the investor side is there is lots of money, but sometimes there is a mismatch in terms of the expertise and the skills that the investors have versus what startups need at the early stage.
True. I've listened to you sometime. You're pretty active on your sharing on your blog and on LinkedIn, and I've followed. I mean, I think it's also on the startup side too. I mean, they're this developing. It's catching up to the West, I would say. But I think there's still a lot that in Hong Kong and Asia, I think needs to catch up into Western startups. And what's your insights in that?
Yeah, so I think it, rather than looking at it, as, you know, just in terms of let's catch up to what's going on in the West or Silicon Valley, it's really useful to think about what are the strengths specifically, and then focusing on those, and then also being, you know, transparent about the weaknesses and the challenges, and figuring out how to improve some of those. So starting off with things that are actually, in my view, even ahead in Hong Kong, certainly the attitude towards globalization and cross-border businesses. You know, Hong Kong is a leader in the world. So whether it's cross-border businesses across Asia, cross-border connecting North America or even Europe or other parts of the world, Hong Kong just really has that in its DNA. Now, traditionally, that's been more of a trading environment, so physical products, you know, being traded in and out. But the good news is that that's created this fantastic infrastructure for any business to be global. So that's on the positive side. On the challenging side is sometimes that infrastructure isn't as well suited to early stage startups. And so, you know, some parts of it work well and some parts of it aren't as smooth. So for example, dealing with the banks in Hong Kong, the banks are very international and very global, but they're actually extremely unfriendly when it comes to startups. So opening a bank account in Hong Kong is surprisingly painful for a startup, even though, you know, in theory, it's a global financial center. So yes, there are certain challenges, even with the globalization mindset that people have here.
True.
In terms of the ecosystem itself, I'd say more generally, you know, the biggest, I think area of focus that needs to maybe be improved on is that Hong Kong has this fantastic early stage aspect built out already. So when it comes to events, when it comes to awards, all these great things to get people excited about startups. That's all happening. You know, we've got now over 30 co-working spaces, up from 2 a few years ago. So that's fantastic to get people really excited about startups. But what we need now is more people helping startups deal with the reality of, hey, it's hard to build a business, and there's lots of challenges, there's lots of questions to be answered. And I think it's important, you know, not to just focus on the positives, not to just celebrate and give it awards, but to actually say, when a company hits challenges, you know, there are people that can help. And I think sometimes there's a little too much emphasis put on the cheerleading and on the awards, and not enough emphasis on, let's help companies to actually be built.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's the Asia thing, or maybe anywhere, but when there's these challenges, I think when startups are quieter, and they're either this, I'm not sure if it's the ecosystem or the culture or the people, but sometimes they just don't want to share that with others. And maybe this is a chance, if you're willing, maybe you don't have to explain names or share names of companies or people, but maybe we could understand some of the struggles they're facing. I mean, I know you mentioned bank account opening, or is there anything you'd like to share of some stories or examples?
Yeah, well, I it's definitely true that I don't think it's specific just to Asia. I think this is a general startup ecosystem problem, that as startups become more popular and people think it's really easy, you know, you get more people jumping into the ecosystem that don't realize how much harder work it is. So I do think it's a general issue across the board, not just in Asia, but it's something that we certainly need to work on. In terms of specific examples, on that note, rather than calling out names, it's more of just generally making sure that people realize, you know, that just because a company wins an award, that doesn't actually mean that they have a strong business. You know, the awards and pitching are one thing, and then they're fine, but those pitching events and awards aren't the things that build the underlying businesses. You have to have successful products, you have to have customers that are paying, you know, typically revenues, or at least using the product. And those are the metrics of success, you know, rather than how many tweets were retweeted or something like that.
True. I think it's also maybe setting simple metrics, or sometimes there's overwhelming amount of data now, right, with social media and you know, analytics. So I think startups maybe should just simplify down to, like we said, like product development, milestones, and customers as well. And I kind of jumped around a little bit in my questions because of that. But I'm going back to the earlier question. So I like that you said there's definitely some strengths in Hong Kong and Asia, with the, especially agree with the cross border. And maybe we can talk about some industries that you see opportunities in here. Like I know people sometimes say financial and e-commerce. Is that what you agree, or what are your thoughts in industry specific opportunities?
Yeah, I think it's useful to focus on specific companies and how the company can benefit from the strengths that Hong Kong brings to the table. So for example, we just invested in an education related company called GoWell, which provides support and education for Chinese students to study at overseas universities, because we know that there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of Chinese students going to overseas universities, and that's growing quickly. What most people don't realize is that 30 to 50% of those people don't graduate, right? So they pass the exam, they go to the university, and then they drop out at some. And that's terrible. And so this company is really focused on not just helping people get into the university, but actually deal with all of the lifestyle issues, all of the cultural issues, you know, things about, you know, something as simple as how to work in groups and teams. And so that's a business that's perfectly suited for Hong Kong as a base, because yes, it's working in China, but also there's a huge component of network and relationships overseas. And it's really the cross-border angle, which is important. So education may not seem like a sector that is obvious as an opportunity, but once you add the cross-border angle, it actually becomes fairly compelling. And I think more generally, you know, I think that's the way to look at it, is bottom-up, specific to each company, rather than top-down. Because it's really easy to miss opportunities when people think top-down. And it's much better to start with, you know, what are the specific things that a company needs, and how can Hong Kong or another location help with those specific needs?
Got it. So yeah, this is interesting. And do you want to share maybe some of your other investments? I think that's also insightful for some listeners.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we've seen in Asia is that a lot of emphasis has been focused on consumer related businesses. And you know, that's kind of an obvious thing. What we feel is exciting about Hong Kong is that Hong Kong also has this massive infrastructure and platform for the business side. And so one of the companies we've invested that is focused on the environment is a company called Insight Robotics. So they create systems to protect things like forests and pipelines using special infrared cameras and UAVs that are focused, you know, on these larger areas. So when I'm talking about UAVs, it's not the small quadcopters that are flying around cities. It's actually more like airplanes that are covering much larger areas of ground in the countryside.
Interesting.
And so that company's, again, based in Hong Kong. They've got business in China. They've got business in Southeast Asia. And they're just getting into the Western markets. So Hong Kong is a perfect location to have this kind of global perspective. And it, you know, it really has nothing to do with the consumer. And that's fine because Hong Kong is a perfect base for that. And so on that sort of broader note, we just have a new incubator or accelerator that opened up called Blueprint, backed by the Swire Group. And that's a B2B accelerator here again in Hong Kong. And we think that's a pretty interesting fit where companies from around the world can come and be a part of that experience and really leverage Hong Kong's cross-border perspective. So we're pretty excited by the fact that people are now realizing there's more than just consumer. There's other opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, B2B is, even in the Valley, I've heard it's enterprise and selling to businesses is a new frontier in a way, because consumers seems to be pretty maybe saturated or, you know, overdone in a way. But yeah, I think
the consumer environment is very competitive, and a lot of times for the consumer business, you know, what people are trying to do is kind of catch lightning in a bottle, which is great if it works, because you know, when you catch that lightning, yes, you can literally sell the company for billions of dollars in a couple of years. But for the vast majority of companies, you can't catch that lightning in the bottle. And it's not about how hard you work. You know, it's not about working harder. Whereas in enterprise or in some of these more boring businesses, the amount of effort you put in can actually have a direct impact on the results of the company.
True. And, you know, I think it's less customers, usually higher value, you know, per customer, per business. So you need less customers, and you can get to know them better and engage with them more, so that people should always be listening to their customer, right? I don't want to bring up lean startup again, but you know, I think it's true anywhere. Listening to your user or your customer is critical. And
it's also a less mature environment where if you're going into some of these traditional industries, you know, the key challenge is really that they may not be interested in innovation. But the good news is what you're competing against is typically at best 10-year-old technology or sometimes even 30-year-old technology. And so you don't have to build this amazing product. You have to build something which is better than 10 years ago or 30 years ago, which is actually not that hard to do. So a lot of the times the key challenge is convincing the people who have the budget that this new technology is worth the risk compared to what they have from 10 or 30 years ago. But the good news is typically, you know, what you can build now is about 100 times better than what exists 10 years ago.
That's true. But I can also think their businesses need more hands-on training. In my experience, you really got to sometimes sit down with them, or you also got to think about setup. You might have to have some full service sales and training for the company and the users, because they're not as advanced also in using technology. So something else the listeners should think about.
Definitely. So when we look at the business side, we kind of see it as two extremes. You either end up going up market and focusing on enterprise sales. So the way the numbers work out is you typically need each customer to be spending around $30,000 or more on a product. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to invest in that sales and support infrastructure. Yeah, so those are some pretty high price points.
Yep.
Or you go down and you go to the credit card level, but it has to be self-serve. So it's $20 a month US, and the customer has to be able to use the product without any help or support, essentially. The problem that a lot of people fall into is they get somewhere in between where it's, you know, $100 a month, or even if you get up to a couple of $1,000 a month, it's actually very easy to get trapped into a price point which seems high, but actually isn't high enough to justify that extra investment, which you have to make in sales and support.
Yeah, I think I've been stuck in that myself many times. that's great insight. I'm really happy you're sharing that. Kind of getting towards the end, and I like to talk about, you know, I think a lot of listeners are, you know, in their 20s, 30s, usually from the West, and they're so excited about coming to China or Asia to do their own business. Obviously, we've seen Alibaba and Taobao all over the news in the West about China. And so I keep getting more and more of these people interested. What would your be your kind of, like, it's hard to know who they are exactly, but maybe generic advice for somebody's trying to come over to Asia and build the next Alibaba or build the next big thing?
Sure. So I think from a timing perspective, you know, we're definitely past the point where somebody can just come into Asia and expect it to be easy. So first of all, people have to think about what specific edge they have, because the competition here is pretty fierce too. So it's not like there's lots of low hanging fruit where people aren't trying to look for opportunities. Now, having said that, yes, I think if you have a specific area of edge, whether it's sales side or whether it's on the technical side, there are lots of opportunities. Then the second thing to think about is Asia is not a country. Asia is definitely a continent. And so rather than thinking about Asia, it's really thinking about, okay, is it a specific city that you want to go to? Do you have the language skills in that city? Or are you willing to invest the time to pick up those language skills? You know, how big is that market in terms of that country? So think about it at a country level. And then the final thing is for Asia in general, you really have to be on the ground. So yes, some level of remote work can be successful, but typically to make progress in Asia, you really need to spend time on the ground.
That's definitely true. Even today with all the technology, it's still face-to-face is the most ideal, and understanding your customer. I mean, it's true probably everywhere, but I think especially in quote-unquote Asia or in a country in Asia, you're going to get the best insights by your user and knowing your industry and the market by being there. That's really great, Titus. Thank you again for sharing so much. Is there ways people can pitch you or reach out to you for more information? Or what do you, of course, any information you want to share? And also maybe for those interested to pitch you, what would you suggest them to do?
Sure. For the advice we give to all entrepreneurs is to actually start with feedback from other entrepreneurs rather than going to investors. And so, you know, ideally find other entrepreneurs who you think are successful and you think may have some interest in helping you, and then talk to them and get their feedback in a couple of ways. So first of all, get their feedback on your business, and they'll be pretty blunt and they will say either you're ready to go pitch investors or you're not. And if you're not, then there's no point in wasting your time in pitching investors. Go back and work on the business. And then if the other entrepreneurs say, yes, you should be pitching investors, then work with those entrepreneurs to identify who are the investors you should be pitching. So that means, first of all, making sure you weed out the bad eggs. So, you know, there are some investors out there who may not be as friendly, and you have to get that information from other entrepreneurs because they've been around the block. And then secondly, you know, even with some great investors, sometimes you're just not the right fit. And so you have to understand, you know, who are the investors who have specific interests in your area and in your sector, because that will save you a lot of time. So if you're focused on a consumer social network, you know, you have to think about which investors are focused on those kinds of businesses rather than pitching people that are less interested in that specific area.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing, Titus. And can maybe on the show notes, we could, we'll link your website and any other information you want to share with those interested to contact you.
Yeah, on our website, we've got an email address. So that's probably the easiest thing if people want to send something cold. But I would say that the best way to get in touch with us is talk to some entrepreneurs, you know, either in Hong Kong or a U.S. network, and then get their feedback.
Got it.
That's the most valuable way to progress.
Definitely. Okay. Thank you again for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
And, thanks for having me.
Okay. Pleasure. And that's a wrap. Thanks, Titus. I really thank you for coming on to the show and sharing with everyone. And I hope these tips and insights help some of you entrepreneurs and business owners listening in. John Buford also was on the show back in episode 15 at globalfromasia.com/episode15, and he gave some similar ideas on raising money for your startup, as well as more into the structures and methods and contracts you might need to do. John also mentioned getting into the community in Hong Kong, meeting people, having coffee dates, and building relationships to help you get plugged into community. Investors like Titus, you know, don't want to get pitched cold. They like introductions from reputable people in the community so that they know who they're talking to, and there's a little bit of skin in the game for that person introducing them. I also made that cheat sheet of some investment firms and investor programs in Hong Kong. You can download for free by opting in on the show notes at globalfromasia.com/episode59. So go ahead and check that one out. I hope it helps. And last but not least, this week is the last week of my early bird pricing for the Hong Kong Business Charge book. Going into December in 2015, I'm going to have new packages with new pricing. And you can go ahead and check out the offer at globalfromasia.com/HKSuper and grab it while it's hot. All right. Thanks, everybody, again for tuning in, and enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.